Behind every interesting person is a great story. This is Person of Interest with Natalie Jones.
And it's time for the Person of Interest with Natalie Jones. What's going on, guys? It's been a while. So happy to be back. I'll be back in podcasting. I'm taking a break from the workout videos. Those occupy a lot of the time. And now I want to get to know Cincinnati a little bit more. So we are back with Terry Lukemire. Super stoked about this. Terry made the documentary about Marty Brenneman that is premiering tomorrow, August 17th, 2020, at the Starlight Drive-In Movie Theater in Amelia. And actually, over the weekend, I ran into Marty Brenneman at Finley Market. Yes, I was drinking beer in the beer garden, doing push-ups on the ground. Then I saw him and I jumped up and he was amazing. He had his whole family with him and he took the time to say hello and to take a picture with me. And I told him about this podcast. So Marty, hi, thank you for listening. And I hope you guys love this as much as I do. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Terry Lukemire. Oh, and the name of Marty Brenneman's film is How We Lookin', The Immortal Words of Marty Brenneman. Okay, and so let's just give a little backstory. So Terry's with us today because he has written, produced, directed the whole shebang for the Marty Brenneman documentary coming out that is
called How We Lookin'.
How We Lookin', yes.
The immortal words of Marty Brenneman.
Yes, How We Lookin', The Immortal Words of Marty Brenneman. He has a lot of other immortal worlds, like a Titanic struggle, which is what has produced this film as well, right?
Yeah, I started usually do an LLC for each movie, so I thought it'd be fun to call it Titanic Struggle Pictures.
That's LLC. Awesome. That's awesome. It's so cool. So you are a very seasoned, experienced, and award-winning film guy yourself. So you've already directed, written, produced a bunch of films. You've worked with Val Kilmer, James Franco, who's the guy, Ving Rhames. Yes. I was like, how do you pronounce his name? How was working with him?
Yeah, it was kind of funny. So those films are things that I've edited. Usually a lot of these companies that come into town now take advantage of our Ohio tax incentive, mm-hmm. which is cool. So so I'll get to edit quite a few of those things. But I did get to meet both Val and Ving on that one because we were in an edit trailer on set.
Yes.
And Val was really cool. He was very thankful. I would come up and give him cuts of what Ving did the day before because mm-hmm. they weren't on set at the same time.
Oh.
And then I remember Ving, he was coming out. There was some kind of, it was a horror picture, and he came up out of the cellar or something like that. And it was so funny because I was just standing up there waiting to talk to the director about a couple of things that I was cutting. And Ving goes, I haven't met you yet. And I introduced myself, and he goes, very nice to meet you. I can't wait to see your work. And I was like, Ving Rhames, Marcellus Wallace just said hey.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So what is it like giving Ving Rhames a handshake? What are his hands?
Oh, yeah. He was very cool.
He's gorilla hands?
A little eccentric, too. He's what do they call those actors? Method, I guess, or whatever. Mm,
so he is that character on set all the time?
Yeah. So that was kind of fun. But he was really cool. Usually you don't want to upset the editor, I guess, because we have a lot of, in control things mm-hmm. with the way the movie goes. But yeah, it was cool.
Oh, a control thing. So is that kind of, so did you like being in control of the Marty Brenneman film then?
So this is about my sixth movie I've directed and edited. Most of them are documentaries, and I just feel like documentaries are kind of an editor's format anyway.
Yeah.
So speaking of control, I mean, it's kind of weird to, if you're not cutting your own picture, what are you doing? Because you take this whole gobbledygook of footage and then you chop it down and carve mm-hmm. it into, hopefully something that makes sense for a movie. So I usually just play both roles when I do my own movies.
Oh, that's wonderful. As someone, I say this all the time on this podcast, but I worked in documentary film for 6 years before I worked at Q102. So it has a special place in my heart and a lot of filmmakers and stuff. And the process is a long time, everybody. It is a long time. There is so much thought and effort and manipulation and extreme minute attention to detail that goes into these films. So, all right. So now let's just talk about How We Lookin', okay? You're so kind. So you're an obvious baseball fan and you're from Cincinnati. And now I have to ask the Cincinnati question. Are you from the east side or the west side?
That's the thing. I'm an east sider.
No way. Where?
I grew up in Amelia. I went to Amelia High School, actually.
Nice. Yeah. Cool. I read that you approached Marty about making this film, and then he said, whoa, before you knew that he was retiring. And then he was like, why don't you wait a little bit and then follow me around, next season, which ended up being his 46th and his final season. So did he tell you that? Did you know that going into this?
No. So Josh Sneed and I were wanting to do a project together. And we were trying, and this was with actually Nick Lachey, too, was on board, to do a documentary on The Big Red Machine.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably about 2015. And it's just really hard to raise money on any independent film, as you might imagine. And that one in particular, because we had, you know, the grade eight guys, and it was just a lot of logistics for that. So we kind of failed miserably on raising any funds. And then Josh was like, you know, next year is Marty's 45th year. And I grew up again. I started playing baseball in 1974, mm-hmm. and that was the year that Marty started. So, and he's always been a guy that I was like, you know what, if I can go into broadcasting, I'd probably love to follow his footsteps. It was basically him. I always say this, him and Gary Burbank.
And who's Gary Burbank?
So Gary Burbank was our legendary 700 WLW 2 o'clock guy who mm-hmm. would do voices and, you know, just this comedy show. And that was back in the day when, you know, radio, you would still be able to write a lot of original stuff
yeah.
before coming in the clocks. And I guess the stuff you guys have to stick to now. So he was another a guy.
Oh, no, I just
Cincinnati.
Say whatever I want to all the time.
Well, yeah,
I get in trouble.
Josh and I were like, yeah, I definitely want to do a Marty doc anyway. And 45th year is a great, let's do it. Let's go talk to him. And then Marty, I was doing my research as I always do and prepping everything and starting to get a budget together and everything. And then he said, you know, guys, you might want to wait. I'm thinking next year might be it. And so I still have plenty of work to do on it. So I've been on this thing for about 18 months.
Wow. So that shows proof to Marty's character right there. And obviously to Josh and yours as well. Is Marty as great as we all think he is when we get to meet him?
Oh, he's ridiculously cool. And I just am so humbled that he trusted me to tell a story. Because when you go into these things, you have to become the expert of that subject. And then mm-hmm. I do documentaries like on characters. I call them characters, but like my first documentary, I did one on the Naked Cowboy.
American Icon.
American Icon. So he's from Green Hills.
He
a lot of people don't know.
I know. Didn't know that. Yeah.
And I just am always like, I just like individuals that are doing stuff that's interesting.
Well, let's talk about some other of your documentaries. So you've made a lot of sports docs as well. So you made one about the Naked Cowboy. Also Pete Rose, you did a basketball one as well.
Yeah, so there's a famous story. I remember I was like probably in junior high. Simon Kenton's 1980-81 season.
Mm-hmm.
Now Simon Kenton High School back in the late 70s, early 80s, was like the size of Mayberry, and not like Independence today, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they had 3 6-foot-8 guys on that team for this little thing, right?
Something
this
in the water. Legit.
It must be, yeah. Growing them down on the farm, right? But they went into the state of Kentucky with like ranked 16 in the state. And they, you know, the whole state, and they don't mm-hmm. have divisions like Ohio.
Yeah.
I don't know if that changed since I made the movie. But they were going in with these high expectations, and then they had an explosion at the school, an art room kiln, and it killed one of the students and a lot of firemen and everything. And half the school was, you know, and they had to repair it and everything. Mm-hmm. And they thought they weren't going to have a basketball season.
Yeah.
Somehow they did. They came back. And so the big Cinderella story is they went from that and went all the way down, you know, in at the UK Rupp Arena, won the whole thing.
Yes.
And they were like the only team from the ninth region for like 100 years or something. It was crazy.
Oh my gosh.
And that was cool because that was my real, that documentary gave me the confidence to then do Pete, and then, you know, Marty came off of that to tell those kind of more, like I said, they're more personal stories, I guess.
Well, so can you say, like, so going through these tiers of confidence along in your career, and you get to Marty, what type of attitude did you bring going into it?
Well, I mean, it's always the same thing. This one was a little better because Marty was in my movie for 4192,
mm-hmm.
and so I had met him. You know, I'm just shocked that it's been 10 years since that movie. This is our 10-year anniversary.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. But he was so integral because he was the broadcast guy from, you know, when Pete came and,
mm-hmm.
You know, well, 1974 all the way through the hit.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just so giving and cool. And, you know, a lot of those guys, I just feel like, you know, the Big Red Machine, and those, every one of those guys, Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan was my guy, and Tony Perez, I mean, they all deserve their own documentary.
Yeah.
And it just came around, it was time to do Marty, and, you know.
And you got to do
it. Yeah.
So that going into it, like with the confidence, was there anything, was there any one particular question, moment, this is a layered question, or subject that you were apprehensive and nervous to bring up with Marty or talk about?
You know, I try to, I'm not really like a Michael Moore guy where I go after, you know, the more, what do you call it?
The shock factor.
I try to do these little tributes, I guess. But I still need to tell the truth. Marty's very outspoken, of course. And, you know, and I said, you know, I don't, and he goes, nope, I want you to tell anything. I want you to ask me anything you want.
Yes.
And so when you see the movie, there's definitely a section in there where it's like, that's the Marty we all know and love as fans, but where, he should have been fired or, you know, he's.
You know what? Icons and legends are not made without a whole rap sheet of I should have been fired, but I wasn't because of this.
That is a true story.
You know what I mean? Yeah. He earned it for sure.
Absolutely.
So going through this, like what? So this is an 18-month process. Let's talk about how you were supposed to premiere this opening day. It was part of the whole opening day, first season without Marty, et cetera, et cetera. And now, obviously, because in 2020 we were in COVID land, that did not happen. And how are you? So now you're premiering the film August 17th at the Starlight Theater in Amelia, where you're from. That's got to be a great...
That's cool, because that is ironic that we still have a theater out by me, which I grew up going to. I love that theater, and the folks there are great. But it was really, you know, chosen because of necessity.
Yeah.
You know, there's just no theaters really that could pull this off.
Because I am a woo-woo, stars are aligned, always optimistic person, I feel like maybe this all happened for a reason. And now it's a good homecoming for you. You get to premiere your film at your
hometown.
That's
a good way of looking at it. I like that.
The stars aligned at the Starlight.
Right on.
So in this film, How We Looking, The Immortal Words of Marty Brenneman, you also interviewed a lot of really awesome, famous people in the like ESPN biz and the broadcasting biz and in the sports world. Were there moments with these people that you number one, do you have like a favorite moment from interviewing these guys?
It's so surreal because, you know, all of these guys are people, again, that gave their time because of Marty.
Yeah.
They wanted to do it. And then, of course, our guy Josh, who knows everybody, he was suggesting some guys. And he was really responsible for Kirk Herbstreit more than anybody. I wanted to do Urban. I knew that Urban and Tom Brenneman, because Urban's on Fox now, and he's met Marty several times. But I went to Ohio State, so I'm a Buckeye fan.
Oh, nice.
And it was cool because he invited us because of Corona. We drove up to his house in Columbus.
At Urban's house? There.
Yeah.
Cool.
And that was really cool. He was so great. Signed a book for me and everything. So,
awesome.
So I get a little gaga on some of these things, too. And then Kirk, we went down to Nashville, is where he lives, believe it or not.
Wow.
And he's the most laid back, just regular guy.
He seems like it.
He said, quote, yeah, I grew up, I was in Wyoming here, but on the bad side.
There's not a bad side to Wyoming.
That's the way I look at it. But I think he went to Centerville High School too.
He did, and he went to Centerville University as well,
So he's just been a big, and he's in broadcasting now, and he's another Ohio State quarterback. So that was great. Like I said, Nick, that was a little scary because Nick was on board from the beginning. And then Nick Lachey. And he was kind of stranded in L.A., you know, with the coronavirus and stuff. And I even had a plane ticket to go out there, but then it got canceled.
Yeah.
And so I luckily have a crew of actually former Cincinnati people who are out there making a living, tearing it up in TV and movies and great. And so my buddy Dave Thies out there, he got a crew together, and I did the Nick Lachey interview over like a Zoom thing.
Nice.
So,
really?
So we got him.
Well, the quality on that is amazing, by the way. You cannot tell at all.
Thank you. So that worked out nice. But we were supposed to have a couple other guys. Joe Morgan, like I said earlier, he was my idol. I was kind of I played every position, but I was more second base. One of Marty's best friends. And
really?
We just couldn't pull it off because of his stuff.
Well, so was it hard for you when you were around Joe then, to remain really professional when you were kind of fanning a little bit?
Yeah, it's funny. I had met Joe and Johnny Bench, through when we were pitching the Big Red Machine.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of, it's always hard to hold back on that. I mean, Pete Rose, the first time I pitched him that idea.
Yeah.
He was living in, where was he? I think he was in LA, but he was going back and forth to Vegas for his signings and stuff. And I had a buddy who got me in contact, and I said, Pete, I want to tell the 4192 story. And he goes, well, I'm curious to hear what you're saying. You're from Cincinnati, and I'm going to come up. And he's sitting in my office, and I'm pitching him his own life story. I'm like, this is what I want to do. And he was like, yeah, okay, let's go with
it. Okay, so let's talk about that. Is Pete Rose, what was it like working? All right. Who do you like better working with, Pete Rose or Marty?
You know, they're kind of, in a weird way, because they're really, like, best friends. They really are.
Yeah.
Like,
really?
Yeah. Oh, first thing Marty said when I met him back 10 years ago, coming in to interview him, I'm like, hi, thanks for doing this and everything. He goes, you know, the movie you ought to make is, you know, me, Rose, and Morgan going around in the 70s doing our thing.
Ah.
You know, they were, like, tight off the, off the game and stuff. So they're kind of, they're just shoot from the hips. I really like interviewing athletes, I think, because they are just regular guys. They're not really uppity celebrities, and they love stories.
Yeah.
And I always looked at that movie and this one, like, that's Uncle Pete telling a fireside chat movie or something, you know?
Yeah.
And he was willing to give whatever. We had to cut some things out because it was like, that's too funny.
Okay.
A little too insider, but
well, you know what
it.
I think is a common thread with athletes is they still get out and grind in order to stay on top of their game. So they're humbled in ways that maybe we don't, not all of them, you know, not every athlete, but I mean, in order to be the best, you got to put in the freaking work.
Absolutely.
And you got to make sacrifices, which I think keeps you, it's got to keep you humble and grateful because your career is only, you can't do 46 years in baseball like Marty did if you're an athlete. So.
Right. And that's the thing is, you know, they are humble in that aspect because they know that any day it could probably be taken away or whatever.
Yeah.
But they have a long, you know, Pete was 24 years for a baseball player.
Wow.
I mean, that's for an athlete at that level. I mean,
that was even before Gatorade, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's crazy. But they also take great direction, too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're just like, what do you want me to do? Where do you want me to be?
Team player, man. Yeah, that's what it's about yourself. So what did you learn about Marty that surprised you a lot throughout this process?
Yeah, I always am still amazed at his basketball calling. I didn't know how deep that went.
For the NCAA?
So, and even before that. So the NCAA, for example, you know, I was watching the Final Four or the NCAA games back in the day and just on like CBS or something, like regular television. I didn't know that Marty called the Leitner shot, the famous UK Duke game, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's highlighted
in
the movie.
I've seen that behind the scenes.
Yeah, okay. We have a little of that in a trailer. But I was like, wow, he was awesome at that, right?
Yeah.
And so interviewing him, you know, I wanted to start from the beginning. Where'd you grow up? What'd you do? Blah, blah, blah. And I do my research. So I knew that he had been broadcasting in the ABA, you know, the American Basketball League or whatever. And he had this great I don't even know how to describe it. He would have been in the Hall of Fame as a basketball announcer. I'll just say that.
Really?
So he was with the ABA Squires when Dr. J and George Iceman Gervin was there and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And then he got the job from that for the Reds.
Oh, in the 70s, way back in the day.
Yeah.
I didn't know that at all.
Yeah.
And then he actually started off. How old is Marty? Because then he actually started off in broadcasting. He was a news anchor.
Marty is really, really old. No, I'm just kidding. He'd laugh at that. No, he's just in great shape. He gets around, and he was 1942. So what is that? 78.
Jeez, Pete.
Cow, yeah.
That's what I was thinking about him today. So I've been thinking about him a lot in preparation for this. And is he always that tan? And is he always just smiling? As someone, I work in radio. I mean, he's a radio guy. You know, like the days are not all smiley. Like
no,
every
those guys,
day is not smiley.
I always say this too, and this goes for Pete and Marty too. Is like when you're around these guys doing these documentaries, you get to see the fans interact.
Yeah,
and it's like they almost expect them to be on at all times. Because I've seen people like that one day that Pete wasn't, you know, in a good mood to sign an autograph. then all of a sudden it's like, oh, Pete's this and that. Yeah. I'm like, no, it's just, and then, you know, and I've seen Marty was a little impatient on our first interview, not for this movie, for 4192, but he warned us. He said, guys, I gotta be out of here at 2, and we were like, that's great, whatever. So it's, you know, he's getting around 5 minutes till 2, and you know, everything's going great, and we're still rolling. Mm-hmm. Right at 2 o'clock, he goes, okay, I'm out, and he pulled his own lav off, and he walked out. I was like, okay, he really meant 2
he
o'clock.
He means business. He means business. Wait, so, I mean, well, their schedules, I could imagine, are insane. So you're changing my mind on how I feel about Pete Rose. I grew up, I was born in 85, the year that he hit his legendary 4192. That was in September 11th, 1985, right?
Yeah.
So I grew up after his career, you know, and just thinking that he was bad, like not to like Pete Rose.
Yeah.
And that he was a jerk and blah, blah, blah. And he ran with all these people and he was, you know, all the negative things that happened with the bad.
I made that film because of folks like you.
Really? Thank you.
It's hilarious. So one of my good buddies who was in advertising and stuff, I always blame him directly. We got in a big argument. I said, you know, nobody cares, you know, about Pete because unless the way he played the game.
Yeah.
If he was just an average player, you know, and he gambled or whatever, you mm-hmm. know, nobody gave a crap then, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm going to make a movie and show you this guy, his extraordinary playing career is what's being lost. You know, like ESPN had done, you know, some goofy movie where Tom Sizemore played Pete and he looked like Mo from the Three Stooges. And
yeah.
Everything. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. I said, this guy was a once in a lifetime player who just really, we were talking about hustling.
Mm-hmm.
He was the epitome of that stuff.
I was
going to
say, he was talk about grit, right?
Crazy. Mm-hmm. Crazy. And that's, I was lucky because, you know, I grew up like being able, you know, a 7 or 8 year old watching this guy play, you know, and that's what I wanted to make the movie for 8 year olds, you know, really too, to say, mm-hmm. you know what, if you work hard, because yeah. the guy was scouted as like, can't run, can't throw, can't hit.
He had something to prove his whole
yeah,
life.
Yeah, he was just like, he was one of us, and then he did that stuff. So that's why I wanted to do that movie up until the hit and not deal with, you know, because I think enough has been done about the other stuff.
Yes.
So I was like, let me even the score here and show you all.
Oh, good for you.
That was a goal.
Because now that I think about it, like I never thought about him as a player. I really haven't. As
I've
grown
they don't
up,
concentrate on that
but all growing up, I never thought about him as an actual player because I never really got to see him live. And then, but now he's been immortalized through posters and photos, and in every single one, he has that look of determination on his face. Like, whatever
that's
he's
totally
doing.
Him. He was, when we made that movie, I think he was 72, and he went over to this batting cage and started showing these kids how to hit. 72. He was hitting the ball. I was like, dude, he still got it.
Way to go. So he's not that big of a jerk. Okay, that makes sense.
No, he's I love him. I think he's a great guy. And I get he's got some stuff, some baggage there, and to say the least. But you know what? That's not the guy that I'm not a really big person on getting into that side of it.
Mm-hmm.
I take it for what it is.
Well, you seem to really, I mean, you tell the story and tell the story, the enjoyable story that people want to know and love.
I think they should be remembered for, you know, really what they did on the field. Why we do care.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, if Pete was average, nobody would care what he did.
That's a really great perspective. You know, and you're such an optimist.
I try to be.
Yeah.
I try to be. And I'm proud of Cincinnati. These are our people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's so many stories. I was trying to get funding. I want to do the King Records thing. So it's not even just personalities. We have such a great history in this town.
We really do. The King Record, there is a film that came out about King Records.
Yeah.
I went to the premiere actually in 18, into like the December of 2018 mm-hmm. or something. It was great. I must say that the big red machine, I'm just going to put it out there. The Business Courier. They wrote a cutthroat little article about that. Did you read it?
Yes. Well, I did the interview with Stephen Watkins, who I'm going to name his name because, I'd like to go off right now, but I won't. No, he was single-handedly, because of that article, it was a very cool interview. And I said, we're going to try to, so we have control over it.
Yeah.
You know, there is something to be said about being totally independent. I don't mind getting investors involved. You mm-hmm. know, that's great. But we were like, I think this is going to be popular enough. Let's go ahead and do a GoFundMe.
Yeah.
And let's go, you know, the Reds were supporting. They let us have a booth down at the, I'm blanking, every year the what is it called?
The opening day.
No, the December event where the Reds Mania thing or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm blanking right now. I know what it's called. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so it didn't really go off that well. And at the same time, we were supplementing that with a couple people that I was talking to, investors. Mm-hmm. And they were very close to pulling the trigger on it. And that article came out and they said, yeah, I think I'm going to back off. I was like, what? Because of this? Yeah. And they have a choice, the media, to spin it. I'm mm-hmm. not even going to call it spin it. It wasn't like it wasn't true, but it was like written, like you said, in a way that was very negative and very like, we just failed miserably. Don't trust these people.
Yeah,
with your
I thought that like, it was like, this is cutthroat. And obviously the person who read this is like ego all about them.
Yeah.
Like using their personal incentives instead of just telling the story, which I did not seem to be.
Like you said, I do think of myself as an optimist. So I was really bummed about that because I'm just trying to make these movies because, again, these are stories that I care about.
Yeah.
And it was so cynical and so, like, you know.
I know. Well, you know what? I mean, but you're obviously bounced back and, like, made so many films since then. Or, like, this film is going to do so well. I'm so excited for you. And I, like, want to learn more about Marty as someone, to be very honest, who is not the biggest Reds fan. I'd rather go to a fashion show, you know, than go to a Reds game where I don't know Marty Brenneman's, I don't know the whole story in his history, but he's an icon in Cincinnati. I grew up with him, like, you know, and now he's gone. And I want to know the freaking story. I want to know what he's really like. So if you could describe Marty in 3 words.
You know what? That was one of my questions in my interviewees.
And no way!
You're putting me on the spot because I put all those guys on the spot. It was funny. You know, like even his son Tom's like sitting there going, outspoken.
Right? Like, what do I say? Nice.
Right. Right. I mean,
guy sleeps well.
Yeah. For me, it's a little different. I think from a fan standpoint, it's always going to be, you know, outspoken. Like I said, he can be cantankerous at times, but he can also be very, very funny. Mm-hmm. He's just got a great sense of humor, which is the other thing I'm going to tell about. So the movie, I don't want people to go into it expecting like some kind of dry Ken Burns-y documentary. And I enjoy Ken Burns movies, but this is a very entertaining piece.
Okay.
I swear you are going to laugh and you are going to cry.
Oh, great.
And then you're going to learn stuff. Even the most hardcore fans, they're going to learn some stuff that they didn't know.
Okay, like so. What? Without spoiling too much. This is what I want to know. Like, what can we expect? What are things you're going to learn about him? Are there... yes, go into this, please.
Yeah. I think the persona of people, you know, that are celebrities are totally, there's just a different thing. You know, he was so giving with his vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
I always say this, I made Pete Rose cry and now I made Marty Brenneman cry. And that's kind of like, I feel like I'm the Oprah of these sports documentaries.
Yes!
No, but it's really so awesome to not just do like just some kind of interview that's kind of, you know, vanilla-ish or whatever.
Yeah.
They were so awesome to just, I'm like, wow, this is great. This is the personal stuff that the fans want to know. They want to know who they are and what they're all about and stuff.
I think it's great that Marty really sunk his teeth into it. He originally was kind of taken aback, like, wow, a whole film about my life. And then he realized, no, let's do it my last year. Follow us around. Like, let's really, really do this and let's just tell the whole thing. You know?
Yeah, I mean, he was very humble about it and surprised, and he shouldn't be at all. You know, and Josh and I were just, again, from a fanboy standpoint, mm-hmm. we were like, yep, we have the power to do it, and let's make a movie about him. He was just so like, really? Like, and I don't know how many times during the interviews, you know, he would say, do you got something in here that's going to interest people? You know, I was like, yes.
Once again, that humbleness, that's what keeps him so
it
Marty.
It truly is. I'm not even kidding. And, you know, he hasn't gained anything from this except, you know, it's just, I like to look at it as a legacy piece. I had to convince him totally. I'm like, I want your great grandkids to watch this thing.
You're in the Hall of Fame. Well, so that's a good thing. Let's touch on this. So all the proceeds are going to the Reds Foundation and hopefully the Dragonfly Foundation in upcoming months.
Yeah, so that was the original idea, and it still is. The Reds Community Fund will definitely, you know, be a beneficiary of the first premiere. I love the Dragonfly, and Christine over there is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then Marty is still does stuff with them even in retirement now.
Yeah.
And they're amazing. We got a great section of them in the movie. You're going to love. That's one of the ones you're going to cry about, trust
okay.
me. It's crazy.
Is there anything like the trailer? The trailer is amazing.
Oh, well, thank
it's
you.
Like,
thank
yeah.
you. I'm going to give a shout out to my assistant editor, Eric Hengeheld, on that because I said, dude, I'm doing all this other stuff. I said, I want to see what you got. Go ahead and chop something. Here's the things I want, and go ahead and show me what you got. And he put together something. It was like, I don't know, it was like 5 minutes long, the first thing. I'm going, what is this? Like, this, we need something down to like 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
He goes, there's so much good stuff. And I said, okay, cut this, do this. But I really give credit to him and, you know, put it in the mix with this music that just gives you goosebumps.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy the reception of that trailer. Because, again,
cool.
a documentary, trailers usually don't, you know, elicit emotions like that.
Yes, and yours definitely does. And you know, it's great to say about a documentary is it can tell, they can be good and they can be horrible. They can tell a fantastic story really poorly and not really captivate the watcher. Or, yeah, right? You're a watcher. And I think, like, the music has a huge thing, huge to do with it. So, and
yeah, that's the thing. I, you know, my composer, he's an L.A. guy who I met on the James Franco thing you were talking about. It's this movie Blood Heist that's not going to see the light of day. But it's a good movie. It's a fun movie. It's kind of a Pulp Fiction thing. And that's a whole different story. But I met John McCauley on that one. And he goes, hey, I see you're promoting this movie. I go, yep, I haven't hired anybody yet. I said, it's just me and Josh, like, thinking about what we want to do. And then, you know, even my DP was like, dude, I want to shoot it for you and stuff. So we were getting this great guerrilla crew. Anyway, my point about music, I always want to make these things feel cinematic.
Yeah.
I don't want, you know, some, that's just my style. I don't want some, you know, narration that's sitting there telling you statistics and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to feel like, what was it like? You know, I was at the Jay Bruce game when he hit the walk-off homer, which is Marty's favorite call. I was at that game.
That. Cool.
I remember what that feels like.
Cool.
So I want that to come across in the movie so that
yeah.
viewers like, it's a documentary, you know. I'm sure it's like, you know.
Oh no! I hope people don't think that anymore. Does that thought still exist?
No, I think documentaries. This is kind of the decade or the last few years of documentaries. There are some great documentaries. I don't mean to. I love the art form. Clearly,
me too.
You know, so I think they've come around into where, you know, because it's filmmakers now have the gear to do it.
Yeah, kids.
You know?
I mean, you can make it
yeah.
on your iPhone. Well, and I think also which is a great thing is you can stream them on Netflix and Amazon, and some of your films are on Amazon.
Yeah.
Do you have any on Netflix as well?
You know, 4192, we had that on Netflix for a while. It was on Hulu also. I think it's still on Amazon. But this one has the same type of distribution potential. I always get this even from Marty. He goes, is anybody outside of the Cincinnati market want to watch this stuff? I'm like, dude,
yes. First
of all, you're totally our Vin Scully.
Totally.
He's in the Reds. I'm not just the Reds Hall of Fame this year, but he's in the National
yeah.
Hall of Fame. I mean, there's, you know, very, it's just amazing that somebody, you know, he would feel that way or whatever. But I'm telling you, this movie goes deep. I always do that. I put some side stuff in there
yeah.
as an homage to, you know, baseball in general
yeah.
and the history so that it feels bigger. And of course, having, you know, I love the fact that I got Tom Brennan, I got Jeff Brantley, you know, I got the, you know, the guys here in town. But when you have Pete, when you have Tom Browning, when you have Urban Meyer and Kirk Herbstreit and Nick Lachey, I think people are going to be curious to watch that on a bigger level.
Yeah.
So I want it to be on ESPN. I want it to be on, you know, FS1 or something like that.
Oh, good luck and congratulations
yeah.
with that. Now, so what was it like sitting in the box with Marty? Because didn't you and Josh, or just you, sit in the box with Marty?
Josh is hilarious.
A lot of games.
He ruined, I'm going to tell him now because I know he's listening. He ruined that opportunity because he's always busy. No, he's a great dad, and I think him and Dean for opening day were sitting. They get tickets every year, so
yeah.
So he didn't get to do that. So I went out to spring training by myself. Speaking of iPhone shooting, when you see that footage, that's me and my iPhone. Now
yes.
It's rigged out a little bit. I have a lens and a nice mic on that thing. But that's me at spring training.
Mm-hmm.
Opening day. Oh, opening day is my camera work too. Brian, our DP, he wasn't able to get his big DSLR package in until the final game,
gotcha.
Which I'll tell you that in a second. So opening day was cool, and I went with another guy, an assistant, to help me out a little bit on that. And again, like I said, the Reds have just been great. I love them over there. Karen Forgas and of course, Phil Castellani and Rob Butcher, they all just gave me access to so much stuff.
So you got to sit next to Marty in the booth while he announced games in his final season?
So we only did the way the movie is, and I always start off with kind of an outline of what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly I wanted to do, you know, some of his famous calls. Now he's got so many that we couldn't highlight
many.
Them all.
I yeah. couldn't even, I mean, I want to highlight some, but I mean, we can't, there's so much, let's see, like the Tom Browning's thing, Hank Aaron's record tying home run, Pete Rose tying Ty Cobb's on September 11th, 1985. And then there's also so much with Ken Griffey Jr. And then I just read an article that's like, that's Marty Brenneman's 46 top greatest calls. I'm like, what?
Crazy.
This is insane.
Absolutely. And that's, again, a testament to going back to, you know, our great Reds town. I mean, here's a small market town. We have, the past few years haven't been that great, but we try to, you know, keep rooting for the Reds. This team should be doing much better than
we are. A thoroughbred city here, okay?
Yeah.
We support no matter what.
Absolutely.
We don't have to be the best at anything, and we are okay with that. Unfortunately, we understand what it feels like, and we support no matter what. And I think it's important to highlight the personalities that make this city what they are, and Marty is an integral part of this. He has so much more power than, I mean, many, many people in the city, and also he needs to be celebrated.
Absolutely.
Like, he's a great man with such great cheer and, like, and a zest for life and, like, really led our city. So I just think it's excitable. Anyway, I just fangirled there for a second.
His career
is amazing. I love being in broadcasting.
That's the hard thing.
He was
going, well, how long is this thing going to be? You just reminded me of this. And I said, it's 2 hours. And he goes, what? He goes, I said, understand, we have you growing up and 46 years. You know, Pete was growing up in only 22 years of his career that I covered, and that was an hour and 55 minutes. I said, this should be like The Last Dance. We should have did a series on you.
Yes.
And he's just so bored with himself. I'm going, oh, my God, you have no idea the great stuff that didn't make the movie. You know, so I've been putting out some outtakes that are kind of more funny stuff. But
good.
Yeah, so if you go to the How We Look in Facebook fan page, you'll see some of the clips that I posted on there.
Let me write that down.
Yeah.
You know, I have been trying to get Marty on this podcast since the inception of this podcast 2 years ago when it was Person of Interest with Jeff Thomas. And their PR people keep saying, you have to go through Amanda. You have to go through Amanda. Don't ask
That's a
Marty.
True story.
They're like, don't ask Marty. He's going to say no. Like, go through his
Amanda's
life.
A little protective, but she's been great on this movie. I think she's giddy. I just got a text this morning how excited she is about the premiere coming. So
yes.
Yeah, we had a couple other Ron Oster's coming out and George Foster's coming out. People that I didn't get in the film because, I mean, literally I had so many people that wanted to do it. And I was like, man, you know, I want Marty to really tell his story and the other guys, support it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, those guys are all giving too. You know, to have people like that, want to be a part of it. It's very humbling. So
if you go through like Marty's process when you're sitting, like, what is he like when you're just sitting next to him and he's doing his job? Is he hyper focused? Is he?
No, it's so
like
ridiculous. He's such an expert. That's what I was like, how in the world? So those guys in the booth. So he's there with Cowboy and Yid. Yid's his engineer, right? So Dave Yiddy and they're all kind of cutting up and doing their thing. And then as soon as they come back from break, boom, he's right Johnny on the spot. I'm like, how in the world do you just pick that back up?
Right.
And then even during a game, like he'll go, yesterday I was telling this story about, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then, oh, there's a shot up the middle there. And, Senzel picks it up. And then he goes back to the story. I'm going, and I'm watching this going,
professional,
ridiculous.
For sure.
He's been doing it forever. So it's secondhand, but I'm just laughing at like, man, you know, so that was fun to have access to.
Oh,
that.
My gosh.
Watch that.
Well, I can't wait to hear the story because I just remember like Marty Brenneman has just been in the background of my life forever. You know, him and Jim Scott, I'm just like, their voices are just
so from your profession,
omnipresent.
That's another documentary I wanted to do is on our proud broadcast history here.
Yeah.
You know, you got all you guys currently and everything going on. But like I said, when you go back to the Gary Burbanks, Nick Clooney was my narrator on the Rebound story.
Really?
I grew up watching him on the news.
And you know what? J.K. Simmons was a narrator in one of your films as well, and he's now an Oscar winner.
Yeah, that
How
was cool.
That?
I always get to say I directed an Oscar winner.
Yeah,
right?
That's cool.
That
that's
was after,
cool.
like,
yeah.
we did it. So
he's
I
not,
got him before he won his trophy.
It doesn't, hey, you know.
But that was cool. That we shot that in Encino, California, like 1 week before, something like that, before the premiere.
Mm, wow.
That was crazy. Yeah, and he was just so awesomely good.
I like him.
He grew up in Ohio, so he was a Reds fan, but then he moved to Detroit, Michigan, and he was a huge Sparky fan. And he said, you know, Sparky loves Pete like a son. I want to do this for Sparky and Pete.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
I was like, cool.
Hold on. You directed us. This is, I asked Josh, do you have any questions? I was like, I'm gonna quote you on a question. Do you have one? And this is what he said. What was it like to see an Oscar that you directed win an Oscar just a few years later? Because J.K. Simmons was a narrator for the Pete Rose documentary. Okay. And he won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor in Whiplash?
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. That's what it was. Cool. Hold on. So let's go back to Jim Scott. We started talking about him because he also he was supposed to be on this podcast, and then COVID hit, and then we couldn't get together, and now we still haven't been able to get together because of COVID, and that's been like in March. I had to reschedule once in March and then reschedule again, and then now it's like wah wah wah.
Yeah.
So
it's a shame because I mean it's just affecting everybody. I don't really try to dwell on it with the movie, but it did change some stuff for us.
And yeah.
Of course the baseball season. But yeah, even when you're in that category, of Jim trying to enjoy his life, I'm sure, he's earned mm-hmm. it. And and Marty too, he wanted to go on vacation. They've been kind of stuck.
Yeah. That sucked before, leading our city for a long time. So what was your end goal going into this film?
The angle in terms of what am I hoping the end game will be or?
Yeah, when you were coming into this, you were like, this is what I want to accomplish.
Yeah, it's kind of a dual thing, I suppose. Again, me as a fanboy, I just always wanted to do a film. Like, I'm not going to wait for somebody else to do it. I'll just do it myself. And he deserves a movie about himself.
Yeah.
But the other side of it, again, just as a proud Cincinnatian, I think we need, we got a lot of money in this town. I'd like to see, people step up and fund the film arts because we have a great arts community too. But like you said, there's so many great documentaries. There's Women in Film mm-hmm. out there as a great organization.
It's based in Cincinnati.
And, so many people that were on the, I don't know if you saw this documentary, American Factory. It's a great documentary, and quite a few Cincinnati filmmakers worked on that. And it was the one in Dayton about I think it was a former auto plant or something like that. I'm blanking on it because this was last year, and I'm trying to remember specifics. But the Chinese billionaire came over and invested in it, and it's called American Factory, where they're trying to find out how to work under like a Chinese work ethic type of factory with blue collar mm-hmm. people and all this stuff. It's just a great movie, and the Obamas were a part of that movie.
Oh, cool!
And again, a lot of people, but there's just so many. The Film Commission. Kristen Irwin's done a great job. I'm bringing films in here and supporting local filmmakers.
Yeah, she's been on this as well.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah. And there's just a lot of great things in our art form, mm-hmm. and I would just like to see a lot of the budgets get expanded so we can tell these stories, because there was a great movie. One of the things that I compare these movies to that I'm trying to do, you seem like a film geek too, so you might know this.
I could geek out forever.
There's a famous Russian film called Man with a Movie Camera.
Okay.
Okay, and it came out 100 years ago. It was like 1919, something like that. And it was just kind of a documentary where they just took 3 years and they shot around Russia in 1919. And they put all this stuff together, right?
Uh-huh.
So you get to see, can you imagine like 100 years from now, somebody looking at, this Marty documentary and going, that was our, blah, blah, blah. And look at the game footage and look at all that.
Yes.
And wherever the game progresses from mm-hmm. 100 years. That excites me to do a little time capsule stuff, mm-hmm. So,
well, it seems like so did you achieve your goal?
Yeah, I think so. It's weird to say this because a lot of times, I think I'm a pretty decent filmmaker, actually, which sounds egocentric, but I've been
doing it
for 27 years.
Being proud of yourself is very cool.
But this movie had so many weird things because of just scheduling things and trying to do it. And then the coronavirus, because this was supposed to be, I was going to shoot his last game, cut that footage in, and then boom, before the season was over, we were going to have this movie out.
Yeah.
Because everything was fresh with I mean, I went to the last, you know, I was in the booth for Marty's last game and to see those people. And I wanted it while it was very hot and everything. And then we had to deal with this and I didn't get some of the interviews and all this stuff. But all through that, I just watched it last night again with the full final audio mix, you know, because you make a lot of these movies and you're just listening to kind of bad audio and just raw stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, my audio guy, Jonathan Nosp, did a killer job. And I cranked that up on my home theater last night by myself and geeked out and going, this is a really good movie.
That's awesome. That is so
and I do
awesome.
Legit
Congratulations.
Feel happy. I have nothing to say other than I cannot wait to unleash that thing Monday.
That is so cool. Yeah. That is, I mean, congratulations.
Thank you.
I know. We are all so excited to see it and all your hard work. And you know what? You have such an optimistic point of view and outlook on the world. And, you know, I think just can I what I'm seeing right now in
sure.
you is you what's so great about documentaries is that they're real stories and you learn so much and you can make them so interesting and fun. And you've done that so well in the past. And I cannot wait to see what you've done with Marty Brenneman, because what a piece of what a content piece.
Thank you so you know? Much for that.
Yeah. So congratulations. This for everybody in Cincinnati this Monday, August 17th at the Starlight Theater. Show goes on at 9 p.m.?
So we have a couple fun things ahead of time.
Okay.
So gates will open at 6, okay. And then Gamblin' Finn, who I don't know if you, is you know, that might be your rivals or whatever.
Oh.
You know, those guys, Tom Gamble and Finn Rock.
I don't pay attention to people.
Anyway, they've got
kidding.
Their own live streaming show, and they're yes. going to come out and do live streaming at our thing, which
oh,
will
cool.
be kind of fun and weird. I love those guys. And then we have a band.
Mm-hmm.
The Catalina Wine Mixer Band.
Seen that? Yeah.
Yeah. So they're going to play for about an hour. We're going to do a Q&A, film panel discussion with mm-hmm. Marty and our VIPs and Josh. And then showtime at 9.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
I cannot wait.
You got to come over and hang out with me, okay?
Yes, please. Please, please, please.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. And that's it. Man, it feels good to be back. Thank you so much for joining us. How We Lookin', The Immortal Words of Marty Brenneman premieres tomorrow, August 17th, 2020, at the Starlight Drive-In Movie Theater in Amelia, Ohio. You can get your tickets at starlightdriveinohio.com. I'm so excited to be back in podcasting, and I will see you next week. Mwah. Love you. Thanks for listening. I'll see you soon, and make yourself proud today, babe.
This has been Person of Interest with Natalie Jones.